The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning, bodhisattvas. Welcome and thank you so much for coming out on this really exquisite day. Did you know that today is Grandparents' Day? I didn't until I went to my calendar to put September 8th down that I would be talking today. A very obscure date, for sure. Nonetheless, it was like Grandparents' Day. Wow! It struck me as a synchronicity. Since my husband Doug and I became grandparents recently on July 18th, Finn Orion, after the planet, Emerson Rigoluth. And 11 days later, on July 29th, Mary Rigoluth Fisher, my mother-in-law, died at 101 years old. She was a grandparent as well as a great grandparent. I remember the moment exactly when I received a text from my husband that my mother-in-law had died. I was at Wisdom House on the second full day of summer Ango. I stopped. I took the news in. I felt the sanctity of her passing. And then offered a prayer. My cell phone rang with Doug on the line. We talked, and then I headed down to what was next, Samu. Finn and Mary, the creation of new life and the passing away, the circle of life. If you think about it, birth and death are very ordinary events. I wonder how many beings of all kinds, are being born and dying in this very moment. I venture to guess an unimaginable number, countless, as numerous as the sands of the Ganges. So very ordinary, happening constantly, every day, every minute, every second. And yet, I think most of us think about birth and death as extraordinary, supernatural, and indeed, that is my experience. Ordinary, commonplace, usual, normal, unexceptional, supernatural, of or relating. This was from Merriam-Webster, to an order of existence beyond the visible, observable universe, especially of or relating to God or a God, spirit, or devil. departing from what is usual or normal, especially so as to appear to transcend the laws of nature. So Doug and I became grandparents and the oldest in our family inside of 2 weeks. A new order arose, a shuffling of the deck, new cards dealt. And I have to say, that reality really felt in keeping with the ever-increasing lines on my face and the stiffening of my knees. But so I want to turn now to the Vimalakirti Sutra, our study text for the next months. There have been wonderful talks given on this important and famous sutra, beginning with Roshi at Wisdom House. And you can find them on our website. I found reading this sutra this time, which was my second time, to be very rich and stimulating. I didn't enjoy my first reading of it. The endless lists of bodhisattva names and the supernatural aspects felt, well, otherworldly and inaccessible that first time. That was about 10 or 11 years ago. I was less familiar with Zen terms and teachings then, and that made it less accessible as well. This time, I used Bert Watson's translation, which I experienced as poetic and perhaps simpler than Thurman's version. This time, the supernatural was what came alive for me. What I kept thinking about and coming back to. And it was my felt experience of the joy and wonder in the language and passages. I wondered about the intersection of the ordinary, everyday things in our lives and the supernatural, the larger, what we feel and cannot apply reason to, put words to, yet is as real as what we can touch with our physical bodies, because we feel what is larger. For those of you who have not read the sutra, in the sutra, we encounter Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, Devas, Dimas, Demons, to name a few of the mystical beings with supernatural, transcendent powers who travel through worlds and spheres above and below in an instant. Spaces transform, shrinking, emptying, expanding. We encounter beings fearless, wise, and radiant. We meet countless bodhisattvas with long names who act as great physician kings who adroitly, they really with great skill, heal the ills of others, doling out whatever medicine is needed. The sutra creates a world of splendor and wonder. The central figure in the sutra is Vimalakirti. From now on, I'm just going to call him V, a wealthy lay practitioner in the town of Vajshali, now known as Vesali It's an archaeological site. In India, during Shakyamuni Buddha's time, Vimalakirti is revered as a paragon, a mountain of Buddhist enlightenment and practice. He is extolled for his eloquent articulation and expression of the teachings. V is a lay practitioner with a wife and family, kin, attendants, business, and community activities. And I think that, you know, we as a lay sangha can really relate to his everyday world and relationships. V's main purpose and function in this sutra is to encourage bodhisattva activity, to teach, serve, help, and inspire others to attain anattara, samyak, sambodhi, supreme perfect enlightenment. And this morning, when we chanted the Heart Sutra, we chanted together anattara, samyak, sambodhi. To this end, he uses expedient means in many different ways and places, high and low. The setting of this sutra is mainly in V's sick room. V makes it appear that his body has fallen prey to illness. His illness is expedient means, a tool. Because once he broadcasts his illness, numberless and countless visitors arrive and enter his sick room. 8,000 leading monks, 32,000 bodhisattvas, to name a few, gathered round his bedside. So he instantaneously receives a massive audience for him to lecture, to expound what's called the law, to engage in his bodhisattva activity. The sick room is a powerful metaphor for human suffering. V greets those assembled in his room and begins with a lecture on impermanence. And I thought I'd read just a little bit so you'd have a flavor of how he teaches and also the poetry of his language. Good people, this body is impermanent, without strength, without firmness, a thing that decays in a moment, not to be relied on. It suffers, is tormented, a meeting place of manifold ills. And now the poetry. This body is like a cluster of foam, nothing you can grasp or handle. This body is like a bubble that cannot continue for long. This body is like a flame of longing and desire. This body is like the plantain that has no firmness in its trunk. This body is like a phantom, the product of error and confusion. And it goes on and on with beautiful images that really get across the feeling of the body as something that we cannot depend on. So last October, 11 months ago, my oldest son, Chris, he's 38 years old, called on the phone from Portland, Oregon. He delivered the news that he had a tumor in his midsection, intestine, and there were spots on his liver. He was undergoing tests. His wife, Ashley, was away, arriving in a few days. No contact was possible because she was in a third world country. Chris was all alone, and he started sobbing. And I don't remember his exact words, but he was saying, you know, I'm really, really looking, processing my mortality. And I felt like somebody had punched me in the gut. I remember taking frequent breaths and long exhales. I quietly cried with him. I remember feeling really proud of Chris because he was so emotionally available. And that blew me away because that wasn't the family that I was born into. And I had many thoughts. I mean, my mind, like in seconds, jumped to a lot of grim conclusions. My father had died at around 35, my uncle a year later. There were so many deaths in my family growing up, and I went there. And yet, you know what? It didn't take long for me to put on the great brakes to say, stop. You don't know anything. Are way ahead of yourself. And don't believe your intuitions. You know, you think that, you know, right, you're just so intuitive. And so, therefore, it must be real. And I saw the arrogance, actually, in my thinking. I was really moved by the intimacy and the connection. And that was something that was, at the same time we were crying and sobbing, there was this beautiful thing that was also happening because we were so together. And there was love. And we were going to do it together, whatever that meant. The next day after our conversation, I went into work. I'm a staff hospice chaplain at an 11-bed hospice facility. And I was amazed, and again, synchronicity, to find that overnight, half of the rooms were filled with young patients dying. Their mothers, their fathers, their brothers, their sisters, we're in the rooms. Life happens. Life happens to all of us. And this phrase sounded again and again in my head for months. And it was also a gift because my sadness and grief connected me so powerfully to those family members that I was meeting in the rooms. So over the following months, Chris was diagnosed with neuroendocrine cancer. It's slow-moving, it's incurable. He underwent surgery, resection. There were lots of metastases on his liver. You know, after months of recovery, he is doing really well. And then Ashley and Chris announced that they were expectant parents. It was like, wow. I traveled to Portland in August and met Finn. I remember holding him, stroking his temples, breathing him in. And I was filled with the wonder of him. And I was also filled with the wonder of my son and his wife, and their just beautiful care of him. You know, they were like two mothers. That's what a baby needs in the first couple of doing everything together. And I also remember when I held Finn, thinking, this human being What struggles will he encounter? What suffering? What joys? What happiness? This little being is of the nature to age, to get sick, and to die. Holding Finn, I felt awe, a connection to something larger, the wonderment of creation. All of these, I lost my place. Here we are. Something larger. I looked at Finn out the window. We looked together, even though babies don't really focus their eyes quite yet, at the trees, the shapes, the forms, the colors, the flowers, the butterflies. Amazing. How did all of these life forms come into being? What a miracle life is to be present and alive. And I was with Doug's mother in New Haven the day before I arrived at Wisdom House. She was beginning to transition, lying in bed, comfortable, propped up by pillows. I pulled up a chair and sat close to her. Her eyes were open, yet looking beyond the room. She seemed to be in some other sphere, another reality. Because of my work, I really remember thinking, this is so ordinary. This is so, I've done this hundreds of times. And I looked into her face, as I always do with everyone I sit with curiosity. I don't know what words to put to the process that was underway. Disillusion, unraveling, new form forming, creation, all of these words in one seamless, entwined activity. I have heard in physics that energy is never lost, just turns into another form of energy. Blow out a candle flame, smoke rises. I felt reverence, the sacredness of this time as I looked into her face. I love you, I whispered. The miracle and preciousness of her life, now leave-taking, ordinary, supernatural. After Portland, Doug and I traveled to Vancouver Island and stayed at an inn on the Pacific Ocean for a few days of R&R. It was a quiet and remote place. Not many people. The land was primitive and ancient. I could feel the spirits, the ghosts, gods as I walked the beach, the native tribe that had lived there for so long before they were displaced. I walked the beach and hiked in the very old forests. There were trees that were 3,500 years old on Mears Island. Doug and I were dropped off by a water taxi. We were there all alone, no other human beings. I was totally engrossed taking photos with my cell phone. Doug occasionally called out, "We need to speed this up." I ignored him. I was fascinated with the life forms. I felt vibrant, alive, engaged, you know, in this creative activity with my cell phone, investigating, you know, lichen on beautiful grooved bark, you know, inside, outside, these mystical places. The whole circle of life was on display. Tall ancient trees reached to the sky. Fallen trees, they're called nurse trees because they start to rot and their very bodies feed and decay and feed other life forms that arise out of them. So new life was fed and nourished. There were glistening slugs in the mud. Organisms, cellular activity, breaking down, feeding, emerging. It was glorious to be a vital part of this interconnected universe. Magic. At this point in writing this talk, I thought to myself, where am I going? And what do I want to say? I paused. V says in a passage that the potential for waking up is in our difficulties, in our suffering, in the sick room. Our difficulties are the fertile ground in which we plant seeds of transformation. So, pay attention, zazen, investigate the mind, particularly when feeling difficult emotions and thoughts. Do the inner work to loosen attachments. Our human lives are subject to old age, sickness, and death. Life happens to all of us. Be present and embodied in all everyday, ordinary activities. It is in the ordinary that wonder and joy are experienced. When we turn our gaze outwards and see the world beyond our self-centered concerns and small self, a portal opens, the opportunity to release and move into a larger sphere of connection to others, to all of life. And so I have a short poem to end. I called it This Morning. Cicadas sing of boundless realms. In faith, the rising sun climbs the sky, spreads rose-gold light through tree limb gaps. The universe hums of east, west, above, below, a tune of worlds, earth, intergalactic, unfathomable processes. Bow in quietude, breathe, praise, give thanks, appreciate your life, the miracle. So thank you.